Support for this public radio podcast comes from KeyBank, focused knowledge, customized solutions, and the resources of an entire bank. Because the best solutions fit around a business's needs. More at key.com/corporate. Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, dedicated to a prudent approach to investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
9 justices on the United States Supreme Court, 4 different business cases, and a clean sweep. The count was 36 votes to nothing today, everything from tobacco class action suits to overtime pay. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Angie's List, providing thousands of reports on local service companies. These reports come directly from the experiences of the members themselves. Angie'sList.com. The Marketplace Entrepreneurship Desk is supported by the Kauffman Foundation, online at kauffman.org.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Great to have you with us on this Monday. Today is the 11th of June. Sure, there's disagreement among the 9 members of the High Court, but today you couldn't find any daylight at all between them. The Supreme Court released 4 business-related opinions, and it was a clean sweep. There was some bad news for big tobacco. The justices ruled Philip Morris will have to defend itself against civil fraud charges in a state court in Arkansas, not the federal venue the company wanted. State juries are more likely to hand down juicy verdicts than federal ones are. Marketplace's Steve Henn reports it wasn't such a good day for unions either.
If a company goes bankrupt, who gets to keep any extra cash in the pension plan? When Crown Vantage Paper was going under, it closed its pension, paid its former workers a guaranteed minimum, and passed along a $5 million pension surplus to the company's creditors. Not surprisingly, Crown's union, which represented other workers and had a pension of its own, sued. The union wanted to take over Crown's big fat company pension and merge it with its own. Mark Johnson is a pension expert.
The union would benefit from this merger. The plan participants of Crown would not.
Johnson says the union would have to make the same minimum payments that Crown did, but it could use the rest to cover other pension liabilities. Today, the court sided with Crown and the creditors kept the cash. Unions and their allies took another hit just a few minutes later, when the Supreme Court held that home health care workers are not eligible for minimum wage protections or mandatory overtime pay. Gary Hudson at the Service Employees Union helps represent hundreds of thousands of home health care aides.
Denying minimum wage and overtime to home care workers hurts both caregivers and the people they care for.
But paying overtime for all home health aides would cost the industry billions. Home care is one of the fastest growing professions in the country. Unless Congress or a new administration changes the rules, some 1 million workers will remain cut off from basic labor protections. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
I said there were 4 cases. The 4th one was about pollution. The court strengthened the Superfund program. It ruled companies can indeed sue to recover their costs when they voluntarily clean up hazardous materials. While you were out going about your weekend chores, there was a brouhaha boiling in the online world. The activist group Privacy International issued a report about the internet companies it says are the worst about protecting consumer privacy. AOL, Facebook, Yahoo, Microsoft, they're all cited for posing substantial threats. But only one company ranked at the very bottom of the list. Marketplace's Lisa Napoli now on how Google got the dubious distinction and why.
In its report, Privacy International isn't saying much that you haven't already heard about how powerful Google is, like how much information about you it collects and retains. Search engine expert Danny Sullivan says by singling out one company as the worst, the report misses the larger privacy point.
We don't need solutions for Google. We need solutions for companies in general.
Sullivan says it's important to remember it's not just internet companies that hold the keys to our private lives. Just think about what businesses learn about you each time you buy something with a credit card or make a phone call. Paul Stevens of the Privacy Rights Clearinghouse says these days we need to be mindful of how exposed we are.
Things that 20 years ago might have been locked up in a filing cabinet somewhere, you know, are now seem to be out there for the whole world to see.
Mark Rotenberg of the Electronic Privacy Information Center says there's little question that with all its power, Google is one of the biggest threats to privacy out there today. But he says it doesn't have to be that way.
There really can be some better business practices, some good legislation, some ways to get the benefits of new technology without sacrificing so much privacy.
With Google's purchase of ad powerhouse DoubleClick looming, expect the privacy rights advocates to beat the privacy drums even more loudly in the months to come. In Los Angeles, I'm Lisa Napoli for Marketplace.
There was a tug of war today between the bulls and the bears on Wall Street. The object of their affections, as it was most of last week, was the bond market. Investors are trying to figure out what rising interest rates are going to mean. For the short term, mostly what they're going to mean is more trades. But while all those billions of shares have been changing hands, some brokerage houses have actually seen their slice of the pie slipping, which in turn has some analysts predicting some independent brokers might be ripe for a takeover. Here's more from Marketplace's senior business correspondent, Bob Moon.
It got to the point where it seemed everybody was getting into the brokerage business, from the biggest banks to Allstate Insurance, and for a time, even H&R Block. Dan Scalzi of Matrix Investment Research says that's made the industry fiercely competitive.
You have a lot of people who think that if I can, you know, put brokers in seats, that we can make money because we have access to individuals who have money who would invest with us. That's why there's trouble. I mean, there is a ferocious battle for assets.
Charging fees every time those assets change hands is how the brokerages make money. But competition has forced companies to slash prices to attract and retain customers. That's left the middle-level brokerage houses, well, in the middle, and likely takeover targets. Just last week, TD Ameritrade came under pressure from activist shareholders to make a deal, possibly with rivals E-Trade or Charles Schwab. Analyst Dick Beauvais at Punk Siegel says banks are also likely to come calling. Wachovia bought AG Edwards earlier this month. And Beauvais explains that extra sales force can be put to broader use.
You can use it to sell bank loans, mortgages, auto loans. You're able to, if you will, use that same distribution pipeline, but by putting a different level of product through it, you're able to turn it on to be a profitable pipeline, whereas previously it was not.
For the average consumer, the experts we spoke to say all this competition is, in the short term at least, a good thing. It'll bring lower prices. But Adam Ritt with the National Association of Investors says customers who find their accounts being transferred to new companies should watch the fine print.
A lot of these great deals where it's $9.99 a trade or $7 a trade, these are wonderful deals, but they're for specific types of accounts, the amount of money you have in there, the number of trades you make a month. If you're only making a couple of trades a month, it's possible that these great deals won't apply to you.
With plenty more takeover targets still out there, Ritt says investors should watch their accounts as the names of the companies change. In Los Angeles, I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
This one's a little bit inside baseball, but it plays to the theme we've touched on a couple of times, that one day, maybe not too far away, there's going to be one big company running all the world's exchanges. Late this afternoon, the Justice Department gave the green light for the Chicago Mercantile Exchange to buy the Chicago Board of Trade. The government's lawyers say the deal wouldn't substantially reduce competition. There was plenty of competition on Wall Street today. The major indices were up, down, and all the way around before they finally landed just about where they started. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Forget those ads that say, got milk. It's almost to the point where they should say, got money. Economists are guessing milk prices will be up 80% this summer. It's already as expensive as what we're paying for a gallon of gas. And much as rising oil prices are felt in other parts of the economy, so too will be the higher cost of milk. Marketplace's Jill Barshe now on why it's suddenly getting so expensive.
Every year for the last 15 years, Americans drank less milk. Bill Herndon is a dairy economist at Mississippi State University. He says we're drinking more milk now, a lot more.
The market is really in a new era.
Herndon says Americans drank 1.4% more milk during the first 3 months this year compared to the same period last year. In China, India, and Latin America, people are enjoying more dairy delicacies like ice cream and butter. Fast food restaurants all over the world are serving milk with their kiddie meals. And food companies are using much more dried whey. It's a byproduct of cheese making used in all sorts of beverages.
these high energy drinks, like Red Bull. That's what goes in those energy drinks.
Herndon says all this demand is driving the price of milk way up. American farmers are getting 50% more for their milk than a year ago. American shoppers are feeling the pinch as well. The average supermarket price for a gallon of whole milk was $3.38 in May. That's up 18 cents since December. Some dairy experts say milk could go as high as $4.50 a gallon. Chris Gallen works for the National Milk Producers Federation. He says the high prices may not last for long.
And the high prices will stimulate more milk production. Farmers are very ingenious when it's financially profitable to do so, trying to get more milk out of their cows.
Economists say the milk market is frothy right now, but the bubble could burst next year. In New York, I'm Jill Barshay from Marketplace.
You could call it Missouri's Big Dig, just without the tunnels and the multi-billion dollar cost overruns that Boston had. Missouri's Department of Transportation is spending $500 million to rip up and completely rebuild a 10-mile stretch of Interstate 64. The project through the heart of the St. Louis metropolitan region started a couple of months ago. The big mess, though, won't come until next year, when both directions of the highway will be closed down for about 2 years. Businesses along the I-64 corridor aren't exactly sure what that might mean for them, but they're not waiting around to find out. Tom Weber from KWMU in St. Louis reports.
Bunny Salzman's new clothing boutique is booming, both financially and musically. She opened the store 7 months ago in her hometown of Chesterfield, a St. Louis suburb along I-64, about 8 miles west of the big construction zone. But Salzman recently closed another store because it stood in the heart of the big rebuild.
I think for the larger stores, the chains and things like that, they could survive the, interruptions. For a small store like we were, it would have totally hurt us.
Plus, she expected her commute to go from 30 minutes to 2 hours a day. But Bunny Salzman is an exception to the rule, at least for now. Most businesses are not changing too much in anticipation of next year's shutdown, and there have been no big studies of what the economic impact might be. Still, there is some preparing to do. Work has already started to rebuild this interchange at King's Highway, where Barnes Jewish Hospital is located. 20,000 people work here, and they need to get to the hospital to help the more than 1 million patients who show up each year. Hospital spokeswoman June Fowler is part of the effort to get the word out that Barnes Jewish will stay open.
We've put in web-based tools, telephone tools, letters and postcards that we're going to be sending to patients. We're expanding Saturday hours for some of our clinics so that our patients can still easily access us.
Local and state governments are throwing out other options for all businesses. They're pushing public transit and suggesting worker shifts be changed to spread out just who's on the road when. Still, just the cost makes this the most expensive construction project ever in Missouri. And St. Louis residents have never really experienced anything like it. The decision to shut down the highway came from the company that won the bidding for the project. Gateway Constructors told the state the reconstruction would take forever if part of the highway were kept open. Gateway spokesman Dan Galvin.
We looked at maintaining two lanes of traffic in each direction while we did the expansion. And what we've determined was that that would have taken 6 years.
Galvin then uses the old ripping off the Band-Aid analogy to make his point that 2 years of total shutdown really is a better option. The state is also giving $1 million to businesses and communities along the highway to help them with ad campaigns and other efforts to let people know about alternate routes. And who knows? Maybe all the hubbub is for naught. Mike Finan seems to think so. He owns two stores in downtown St. Louis that sell all things trendy and chic.
People are going to find their way downtown. It's a major city. There are more than one access point. St. Louis's have a knack for finding a way around traffic.
This is where you'd use the traffic is like water analogy, that it eventually redistributes itself once detoured. And in that respect, Finan might be onto something. The St. Louis shutdown is a bigger version of a highway closing in Detroit. That's where 7 miles of Detroit's Lodge Freeway are being rebuilt this summer. A spokesman for the Michigan Department of Transportation says the first week of the shutdown there was brutal, but drivers gradually shifted their commutes and found a better way to avoid the highway with help from a state campaign called Dodge the Lodge. For Marketplace, I'm Tom Weber in St. Louis.
Coming up, there are lots of good reasons to offer a helping hand to seniors.
I mean, not only is it sort of like the right thing to do and, you know, nice to be able to provide that service, but that's where the really huge cost savings are.
But first, let's do the numbers. The market started out in a dour mood this morning after a hefty decline last week, but rising oil prices boosted the energy sector. That left the Dow Industrials pretty much unchanged from Friday. It was up just half a point at 13,424. The NASDAQ slipped fractionally to close at 2572. The S&P 500 nudged up 1 point to end at 1509. Oil rose after Saudi Arabia said it will keep OPEC supply limits in place through July. ExxonMobil rose 0.5% on that news. General Motors climbed 2.5% ahead of next month's labor talks with the United Auto Workers. U.S. steel shares fell 7% after it said it's not in talks with a German competitor. Bond prices fell. The yield on the 10-year Treasury note rose to 5.15%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, managing money since 1937 with a focus on consistent results over the long term. Putnam Investments, a prudent approach to investing. Ever hear a song on Marketplace but you just can't place it? Or maybe it's the first time you've heard it and you want to hear it again. Just click on the archive section of our website. We list the songs we play on every show in that day's rundown. There's even a link to an online store where you can buy the song and help fund public radio programming. It's all at marketplace.org.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a glance at what's coming up Tuesday. In Washington, the Treasury Department reports on the federal budget for May. The International Energy Agency releases its monthly oil market report on supply and demand around the globe. And you know those pamphlets you sometimes get from your pharmacist when you pick up your prescription? The Food and Drug Administration opens a 2-day public hearing to get some feedback on those medication guides. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdal. British architects and builders are showing off their contribution to the fight against climate change. They've unveiled the country's first carbon-neutral home at an exhibit in London. The 2-bedroom house is designed to emit no greenhouse gases and, oh yeah, to save a small fortune in energy bills, too. From the British capital, Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports.
This won't win an award for architectural beauty, but the tall, narrow building could be the shape of things to come. Packed with energy-saving devices, it's designed to cut a household's carbon emissions to zero. At the moment, a quarter of the UK's total CO2 comes from homes. Oliver Novakovic of the building research body, which organised today's show.
We're in an era now where climate change is becoming more and more serious, and it's not so much nice to have these technologies, but over the next 15 years, it's a must-have.
By 2016, all new buildings in Britain will have to be carbon neutral by law. The house on display today is designed to show that that's both technically and commercially possible. The architect, Alan Shingler, says insulation is crucial.
Now, well, the key issue in the first instance is to reduce the amount of heat loss that the house would take, so it's highly insulated and airtight. So you only have to heat the home for 6 weeks of the year.
The house has solar panels and a biomass boiler. The energy bills could be as low as $62 a year. The cost of building the zero-carbon house is 40% higher than a conventional one, but, says Shingler, that cost will come down.
As you build more of them, say 250 homes, you get economies of scale. So I do see a lot of these things, a lot of these homes being built across the UK as legislation changes.
The house on display today is a prototype. The government hopes that over the next decade, others will follow and result in an even cheaper carbon-neutral home. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
The latest gaming craze in this country takes luck and absolutely no skill at all. It's quite literally a roll of the dice called Bunko. About 20 million women are playing regularly. They pool their money for small prizes, but corporate America is catching on too. In this edition of The Lowdown, commentator Sandra Tsinglo shares her latest obsession.
In my neighborhood, anyway, this is going to be the summer of Bunko. What is Bunko? Saturday night, 12 women convene. 4 women each sit at 3 card tables. Timer goes off one at a time. You try to roll at least 1-1 out of 3 dice. If you do, roll again. If you don't, pass to the next person. It's 1 point for each 1, 5 points for 3 of any kind, and 21 points for 3 ones. That's a Bunko. You yell Bunko. And at my friend Helen's house, anyway, you get to make up your own traditions. You get to hold the special Bunko teddy bear. Okay, I admit, now that I've described it, it sounds a little dumb. But you have to understand that Saturday night girl fun has become expensive. I have joined girlfriends for dinner at the Pacific Asian fusion-themed restaurant of the moment and have come home 80 bucks lighter and still hungry, with memories of ahi shingles drizzled with frisée, $10 tastes of wine, and $8 valet parking. In Los Angeles, theater tickets have reached $110. L.A. is geographically as far from Broadway as you can get, and $110? And did I mention parking? One time, while actually in Las Vegas, which is to say we had already spent the money, a girlfriend and me said, let's get $10 worth of quarters and enjoy 1 hour of gambling fun. And in 12 minutes, we were bored with pulling handles. And weirdly enough, we kept winning back quarters. So now, unglamorously enough, we were flying home from Vegas laden with greasy change, which is the beauty of Bunko. You're home Saturday night, mindlessly rolling dice for 3 hours. Lots of fun, lots of parking. The winner wins like a $10 Starbucks gift certificate, and all you've been set back is $5 for the kitty and a $4 bottle of wine, or a homemade jello salad with marshmallows. No wonder the official national Bunko tournament sponsor is Prilosec, whose target audience is, and I quote, middle-aged women with heartburn. And how.
Humorist Sandra Tsinglo lives here in Los Angeles. Your thoughts come to us by our website. It's marketplace.org. Click on that link that says contact. It's a sad fact that someday most of us won't be able to take care of ourselves. We'll count on relatives or friends to help. But in some thankfully small number of cases, those people won't. They'll slough off their responsibilities, or worse, they'll steal from the ones they're supposed to be looking out for. It's unfortunately not an uncommon scenario, but Marketplace's Elisa Roth tells us about a pilot project in New York that's looking at alternatives.
How are you?
On a late spring afternoon that feels more like summer, case manager Lindsay Hurd is making an unannounced visit to check up on one of her clients. Her client is an elderly African-American woman who can no longer take care of herself and whose family couldn't agree on who should take responsibility for her. Hurd does the sorts of things an adult child might do for an aging parent or an ailing family member.
I would check on what the current medications are, make sure that there are medications, check the refrigerator, make sure there's plenty of food and things are okay. Does the apartment look clean? Does the client look clean? Do they look well taken care of?
She also found this client an apartment and a home health care worker. She makes sure there's a spending allowance and that a doctor visits every couple of weeks. Hurd works for the Guardianship Project. It's a not-for-profit that's been appointed guardian of this client and about 100 others. The court appoints a guardian when a person is left unable to care for him or herself because of age, illness, or disability. Mary Joy Quinn directs the probate department of the California Superior Court in San Francisco. She says the job requires a delicate approach.
We really don't want to take away rights, but we still need to do protection for those who are frail and those who cannot care for themselves or those who are being taken advantage of by others.
Sometimes it's the caregivers who take advantage of their positions. Abuse, theft, and simple neglect are not uncommon. Depending on the state, there may be little oversight of the process. And in many states, guardians are paid a percentage of their ward's assets, so there's a severe shortage of people to look out for the poor. The Guardianship Project started 3 years ago as a pilot. Like any guardian, the group is responsible for all of its ward's needs, from legal matters to finding an exterminator. The idea was to see whether an organization would be more effective than an individual at doing the job. Jean Callahan directs the project. She says she and her colleagues try to give its clients as much freedom as possible. That often means taking a person out of a hospital or institution.
There's an apartment, there's an infrastructure, there are family and friends, and we can get that person back home, out of the nursing home, with home care.
As Callahan and her colleagues started getting people back into the community, they found an unexpected benefit.
I mean, not only is it sort of like the right thing to do and, you know, nice to be able to provide that service, but that's where the really huge cost savings are, especially for Medicaid.
It's like this. The average nursing home costs more than $9,000 a month. Home care, even around the clock, only costs about half that. So home care is not only good for the patient, it benefits the state, too. Institutional care is so expensive that even many patients with savings eventually end up on Medicaid, so the state ends up paying. The longer the patients are home, the longer those savings last and the less they cost the government. And if a patient's already on Medicaid, getting him home starts saving the state an average of $50,000 a year right away. Those economics changed the project's original business plan. Callahan and her colleagues had thought the project would eventually be funded by guardianship fees.
In the meantime, we've discovered that we have an even better business model, which is we're saving millions of dollars for the state, and that's real hard dollars. It's not future theoretical dollars.
Callahan thinks those savings could fund the whole thing if the project goes beyond the test phase. Now, in the last year of the pilot, the guardianship is still being funded by grants. But Callahan says the group's already talking to both the city and the state to make the program permanent. In Brooklyn, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, where a diversified approach to fixed income can strengthen your portfolio. Putnam Investments, a prudent approach to investing. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication.
This final note, cholera vaccines could someday be administered by grain. A team of Japanese researchers has engineered rice that could potentially carry a vaccine to treat cholera, influenza, and E. coli. Though the work is in very early stages, it's only been tested on mice so far. It could make it easier to deliver treatments in developing countries. It's not the first time scientists have experimented with genetically modified potatoes, corn, and soybeans to carry vaccines. Nothing's worked for humans yet. You can read all about it in tomorrow's issue of Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. And that's Marketplace from American Public Media. Today, the Dow rose just a half of 1 point, virtually flat. The Nasdaq fell a point, also just about flat. The S&P 500 gained a point, up just about 0.1%. Our producers include Megan Larson and Fiona Ng. Marketplace was created by Jim Russell. Next time on the program, some Spanish language websites say they're offering something totally new.
You know, I just came from Spain, and there's so many amazing artists over there that you will never, ever find in the U.S.
I'm Kai Rizdal. Hope you can join us for that tomorrow.
American Public Media.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.